The amount of collisions that would go on would be pretty minor. Back to you, Dick.
I have some more questions.
I know. Eric, what is the max power and max antenna gain on channels above 5?
Okay, then you're going by the rules. I think the antennas can't have any more than 6 dB of gain, and I don't think it's 1 watt. No, I think it's 500 milliwatts. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it's 500 milliwatts. Because there's guys out there selling illegal amplifiers that bring it up to a watt, so there you have it.
Okay, go ahead, Eric. Steve. Okay, I looked in the FCC rules, got where I found it. But hams are allowed to run split spectrum on that band up to 100 watts if it's automatic control over power, I believe it said. And we're considered the primary user of the lower frequencies. Are we governed by the 802.11 rules or the ham radio rules?
I think on channels 1 through 5, the ham radio rules. I think if you're 100% legal, you're supposed to have a listen before talk circuit that doesn't jam somebody that's using the channel. But other than that, apparently, we're labeled to run quite a bit of power. Is that approximately it, Eric?
Yeah, you can run as much power as you can generate. Don't forget, it has to be unencrypted. You're also not allowed to, there's another one of those gray areas, run commercial traffic. Let's say you're using it to extend a node, or you're just doing a VIOP circuit or something like that. That shouldn't be a problem. But it also has to identify in CW. If you want to follow the FCC rules precisely, you know, the amateur radio Part 73 rule. But there are people who go for the higher power and kind of ignore the rest. But at least they're on the right channels.
Go ahead, Steve. Okay, I have no problem making the amplifier. I already have samples of some parts that can bring it up to about 100 watts. But what do you think I would need for power? Now, there are some buildings in the way and some trees, and I found that the 32 element Yagi seemed to give me more gain than a 3-foot dish, so I'll probably reproduce another one of those Yagis, my friend who's also a ham, and put it on his building.
Yeah, you get a lot more gain per square foot of wind load and pound of aluminum with Yagis than you do with dishes at 2 gigs for the kind of gain you're talking about. 1 mile is an awfully easy path for 802.11. Unless you've got some really dense forest with tall trees, with thick foliage, and lots of rain on those leaves, I don't think you're going to have a problem. Quite a few of my buddies on a not great path are running close to 10 miles. I could give you call letters of guys that you can talk to when you either write me an email or call me on the phone. I can give you call letters of guys who are running an experiment right now in Suffolk County for 10 miles, and they're quite successful. Back to you, Steve.
Okay, so you don't think there are some buildings that are fairly high, maybe higher than the antennas we're going to be running. I probably figure about 40 feet on each end. Some of the buildings are probably about 10 feet taller. So you think I could probably get by with a few watts, and I wouldn't have to build these, you know, like manly 100-watt amplifiers or anything like that. Maybe I should just try it with 1 watt or something like that.
There's a good option called the helical antennas. A couple of reasons for it.
Yeah, circular polarization, some people think is a benefit. I'm doubtful of that. But even though those buildings look awful bad with your binoculars, there's a lot of ways the RF can crawl around there. So do the experiment at the 1 watt level. I give you a 90% probability of success.
Okay, and would you call something, I don't know, I bought this antenna with a ham test for about $5. Basically, it's a, it's got the circular discs on a thread rod. I call that a Yagi. I'm not sure if I was correct with that term. It's basically, you know, it's a parasitic they're all parasitic elements fed with a waveguide, basically, a circular waveguide. Is that a Yagi? Would you call it that?
I'll bet you that antenna has the name Bodner on it as the brand name. Technically, it's called a Simone antenna, S-I-M-O-N-E, a French guy who invented it. Most people call it the cigar antenna. but it's a bunch of discs on a quarter-inch rod, all screwed together with spacers, and it's got this waveguide feed horn circular thing at one end, a pot at one end, and Bogner is probably the brand name. Is that true?
I don't remember the name. I don't remember seeing a name on it, but it was a couple dollars at a ham fest, and I brought it to work, and I thought it would be about 2.4 gigs, and it was perfectly in the band. And I noticed that when I had it on the network analyzer looking at the S11, I could be 10 feet away from it, walking across the room, and I saw, you know, the S11 change. So I know it's got some gain.
Oh, yes, that's a darn good antenna. You should be quite happy with that. It is a linear polarized antenna. So depending on how you set up the feed probe on that pot at the back end, you can make that horizontal, vertical, or slant 45 if you like. Go ahead.
Okay, what do you figure? It's got about 15 dB gain or something like that? That's what I was figuring.
How many discs? Give me a rough count of the discs on your antenna.
I think it's 32 discs.
15 dB is the right ballpark.
That's what I was figuring. And the 3-foot dish I had didn't seem to give me, I don't think it's got the same gain on it.
Not at all. A 3-foot dish on 2 gigs, let me think now. That's roughly one-third the frequency, 10 dB lower. I think a 3-foot dish, the specifications are like that, but I think it's a few dB lower, depending on the quality of the feed horn.
Okay, so I think I'll reproduce another one of these antennas, because it is a low wind load. It looks pretty easy to make. I could probably use a coffee can and a probe and just do it. You know, it's pretty easy. Solder it together.
I would buy another one just like it on eBay. There's a good chance you're going to buy it for an awful good price, and the problem goes away, and it's already weatherproofed and built and whatever. You're going to waste a few days of your time just gathering the raw materials to build that darn thing.
You might be right. I didn't think I'd find another one. I never saw one before.
I own a couple of them. At one time, it was a very popular antenna for MDSS reception, a multi-point distribution system. They used to run so-called wireless cable TV on those exact same frequencies, and that was a popular antenna in those times, Steve.
Okay, you wouldn't have to
control
cell
phone, operator you? Change over.
No, I'd like to hang on to the one that I got. I thought I had two. No, I've got one. But I'd like to hang on to it. But at one time, there was a lot of those around. With a little bit of searching, I think you'll find another one.
Okay, so you think I'm going to be fairly successful with getting a reasonable signal from a mile away, as long as to get the antennas aimed. Okay, with a watt. Okay, I can definitely do a watt. That's pretty easy to do. I have a transistor that'll do that really, you know, pretty easily.
I give you a 90 to 95% probability of success. I don't think you have to go to a fierce amount of power to do it, Steve.
If I went to 10 watts, it would only be a 10 dB difference, so we'll see. If I don't do it with the watt, I'd probably give up.
Yeah, make sure you got a good viable system first by running it at a shorter range and make sure that with simple antennas, all your electronics is working well. And then go for the distance. And it's going to require a little bit of care with aiming, because you may not be able to see one location from the other. It may require some accurate compass work, or if you really want to be accurate, you look at the sun at a particular time of the day and you know exactly what azimuth it is. In other words, you go to the right computer program, you plug in your latitude and longitude and the day of the year, and it'll tell you exactly what the azimuth of the sun is, and that gives you a pointing reference that with a compass rose you can then get to the nearest 1 degree if you know what you're doing. The antenna you're using has got about a 25 degree beam width. You want to aim it to the nearest 5 or 10 degrees if you can do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's about what I figured for the 15 dB gain. So I'm going to probably try it. It might not be this season. It might have to be next season. It's getting kind of cold out.
I've done some of my best antenna work in the wintertime. I still remember the day I was up my tower in the snow, and the snow started falling so hard that when I looked down the tower, I couldn't see the ground anymore. And I thought I was alone up there. Okay. Mel, K2KUI, you got the floor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, there's the beep. Everybody remember, we're in the net mode now. This is K2KEY. Well, if you remember last week, we started talking about the light to make some really intricate measurements of actually what goes on with that loop. And you suggested using a balun. Well, I dug through my stuff. I remember somebody had given me a balun. And I finally found it. And when I hooked it up to load and everything to see what it was, well, it wound up. It was one of these 450 ohm. It was made for a balun, 450 ohm line. And it was a nice balun, too, commercially made with T200. Core with thermalized wire and all, so I decided, forget it, I think I'm not going to go that route. What I'm going to do is I have a noise bridge, a commercial noise bridge, somewhere around. I gotta find it now. I haven't looked at it in a long time and I can't imagine where I put it. But I was wondering, if I rework the unknown port on the noise bridge, maybe I can recalibrate it for a 600 ohm line. I was thinking of going that way, Dick, so that I can then, you know, work directly on the line itself. Go ahead.
Can't do it. Don't give up on that 450 ohm balun, B-A-L-U-N, sometimes spelled B-A-L-U-U-N, but most of the time balun, B-A-L-U-N. A 450 ohm balun on a 600 ohm open wire line is only a 1.33 standing wave ratio. That ain't bad. You're being a little bit too exacting here. And I can easily tell you exactly how many feet downrange you hang a stub on your 600 ohm open wire line that'll convert it right at the place where your balun is located. You can do an impedance conversion from 600 to 450. Right at that point, if you want it to be exact. And if the balun has enough quality to it, you don't have to do the impedance matching on the open wire side. You can do the impedance matching on the coax side. You've got lots of choices here. But my first impression is you're being a little bit too exacting. A 1.33 VISWA to me is awful good. Steve, what would you suggest?
Okay, I'm trying to figure out what frequency is the loop for? And I was probably going to suggest that maybe he feeds it with coax, and for a quarter wave, he makes a balun out of like 75 ohm coax to match it to the 100 or so ohms of the loop itself.
Yeah, I think his loop is on 80 meters, and I think he's feeding it with 600 ohm open wire line. Is that true, Mel?
Yeah, it's a continuous wire. Starts at the shack, goes up to the insulator, goes around 272 feet approximately, and comes right back down to the shack, but comes down in a vertical, drops about 35 feet down, and then loops back up into the shack about 10, 12 feet, 14, let me see, 35, yeah, about 10 feet back up into the shack through those porcelain insulators that I have through the wall. So I want to stay with the open wire feeders. I use homemade plastic spreaders for the feeders, and it's one continuous wire, and it works out extremely well. I have no complaints with the antenna. I was just more or less curious to actually see what goes on with it. And I was trying to, by the way, I did try today, do some measurements with that balun hooked onto the open wire feeders and then onto the AEA antenna analyzer. I got some really strange measurements, Dick, over.
Okay, now, one continuous piece of wire. So that's your couple hundred feet of 600 ohm open wire line, the loop of antenna that's the 80 meter loop in the backyard parallel to the ground, and then the wire comes right back down as the other half of the 600 ohm open wire transmission line, both of them connecting to your porcelain feeders. Now, the balun itself, if you go to the Jerry Civic, W2FMI, he's got a series of books and articles, and if you just go to Google and all of your other search engines and you look up the word ballon, you're going to find lots and lots of information, some of it very good. If your particular ballon is wound on a toroid, I'll mention the ways you can change the turns ratio and make it exactly 600 ohms if you want. But that's if you want to change the design of the ballon. But matching your ballon, there's multiple ways you can make it a perfect match. Back to you, Mel.
Wait, can't see you.
Wait for the beep. Steve first, go ahead.
W2ZL repeater.
Okay, I was going to say that most transmission line transformers are, unless you want to get a little bit complex, are either like 4-to-1, 9-to-1, 16-to-1. That's the way they work. If you start doing like a normal transformer, like a turns ratio, they become less efficient. Usually you really want to run a transmission line transformer. I would suggest that he runs a 9-to-1 transformer and deal with the slight visual mismatch. That'll minimize his losses.
Yeah, that's probably what he's got right now, but you've got lots of choices. And with that AEA device, and by putting on dummy loads and shorts and opens and so on, there's all kinds of ways you can measure the efficiency of your particular ballon. Back to you, Mel.
And basically, that's what I did. I took a carbon pile I have, that's adjustable carbon pile, and I set it for 600 ohms, and I put it across that and all. But, yeah, I was getting some measurements, but when I went to the antenna system, tried to hook it up for some reason, I was getting some strange measurements. So I decided that maybe I'll go a different way. I'd like to really try to see what happens if I put the noise bridge right across the 600 ohm feeders directly and go back to that old system of doing it with the noise bridge. I used to have a lot of success with that. It was a commercial noise bridge that worked quite well, and I just got to dig it up. What else? I wanted to ask something else. I can't think of what else I wanted to ask. Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask something about a Smith chart. Somebody asked me, and I couldn't come up with the answer. I think that maybe that if I dig up that noise generator system that I had, the noise RL bridge and everything, I think I could do better with that, Dick. Over.
KC2L2.
Yes, you will. You might temporarily, but there's something else going on here. Your 80-meter loop is a huge amount of wire in the air in Manhattan Beach, in a metropolitan area near New York City. That is picking up television broadcast, AM broadcast, FM broadcast. There's a zillion signals on that piece of wire in your backyard. And all of that jazz is coming into your delicate phase-matching network inside of that AEA antenna tuner and driving it crazy. You've got a couple of choices. In the case of the noise bridge, there your sensing device is a carefully tuned receiver, which hopefully has got a bandpass filter in its front end, and it's only listening to the 3.7 megs, we'll say, that you care about and rejecting everything else. So the noise bridge is going to give you a simpler measurement, and some of those noise bridges are really an RX meter. Let me drop. And so you can measure the resistive component, the reactive component, the phase angle, so to speak, and so on. That's one approach. Another approach is you can build, buy, or whatever, a carefully tuned 80-meter bandpass filter where you pass nothing but 80 meters through your antenna system into your AEA. That poor AEA is being bombed. That's what I think is going on. It's equivalent to what would happen if you carry a handy-talkie up to the observation deck of the Empire State Building. The darn thing will jump out of your hand. Back to you, Mel.
Yeah, that's what I expected, that being bombarded. And that's one of the reasons I thought I'd go to the noise bridge and, like you say, use a narrow filter and be able to then make measurements and not worry about all this other jazz that's coming in there. I was going to ask one more thing about, if somebody wants to make a comment, and then I'll come back with the following question. If the person wants to make a comment, go ahead, please.
KC2L2.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I got another a quick question when Mel's through, I'd like to ask you.
By the way, what are you doing, Mel, now where your signal is beautiful and before it was quite weak for a while?
I have no idea. Running the same power, the same antenna. Can't imagine what the heck is going on here. Maybe we're getting some kind of a strange conditions for a change here. But I've been listening to you and on both. I have both the monitor and the, you know, so I can monitor at the same time and didn't hear any difference. So I don't have any idea what happened unless you move your antenna. Somebody asked me the other day, do you know that they can't seem to find it? I asked them to go on to, you know, Google, do a search on Smith charts, but they said they cannot find any more print on the expanded scale print of the Smith chart. Has that been discontinued for a while? I remember they used to have like a VSWR expanded scale one, I think, to 1.59, but I don't know if that's still available, over.
Yeah, there I can't help you because I've never used the expanded scale Smith chart. But since the one that you can get on Adobe Acrobat is so high in resolution, if you then store that in the right Photoshop or some other kind of computer program, guaranteed that you can expand the one they've shipped you, and it'll look a little bit rough around the edges, but it'll serve the purposes. That is so high in resolution that you can expand that 5:1, and it's still going to look beautiful, in my opinion. No, when I'm talking about a signal being weak, I'm talking about Rich, KC2LTY. Rich, a little earlier, you were weak, and now you're nice and strong. Did you make some kind of a change over there, Rich?
Yeah, I was. I was using an HT. Now I'm using the main radio.
Okay, what was your other question? We'll squeeze it in right now.
Okay. SWR and power field strength meter that checks the RF in the air there. You know, the meter has a little antenna on it. Say this meter was good between 1 and 150 megahertz. Would it be able to work on the power field strength meter side on, say, 900 megahertz?
Yes and no. That's a big function of that particular design. I remember once taking my, I can't think of the brand name now, Selco. There was a brand name that sounded like Selco back in the late 50s, early 60s, of a standing wave ratio mid bridge, which was rated up to 6 meters. And I would use it at 432 and 1296. It gave me some slightly crazy readings, but I found a way to calibrate it. That's the good news. The bad news, whenever I ran more than about 30 watts into it, the diode it had in there was not a super good rectifying diode. It couldn't take the power. Therefore, the diode was running hot. And therefore, I would transmit through the thing, and I was using it in the forward power detecting mode. The meter would come up to a 70% deflection. It would sit there for a while, and periodically it would jump down to zero because the diode had heated up. It no longer was a diode. It became a short circuit. The meter would jump down to zero. It would stay there for a couple of minutes. In the short circuit mode, there was no longer any RF getting to the diode. It would cool off, and then the meter would jump back up to 70% again. So if I made a 10-minute transmission, the meter would jump up and down about three times during that transmission because it wasn't rated for that frequency range. So you can take a Berg watt meter slug. Any of these devices will work at much lower and much higher frequencies. They're no longer calibrated by the factory. You can recalibrate them. They probably, in most cases, will lose some of their directivity. Let me drop.
W2ZL repeater.
That means that when you're in the forward mode, a little bit of the reverse signal is sneaking in. When you're in reverse mode, a little bit of the forward signal is sneaking in. So therefore, your readings are not going to be too accurate. But rarely does an instrument suddenly die like you're walking off a cliff, if you know what I mean. So you'll have to experiment. It's a function of your particular design, your particular brand name. Field strength meters tend to be fairly insensitive, particularly when they're used out of range. The more sensitive ones have a tuning control where they tune themselves to the frequency you're using. Back to you, Rich.
Yeah, no, my question was just if it would work on the field signal strength, you know, not using it for SWR purposes. You know, just you know, putting the meter near the antenna to get a reading. Now, the other thing was I was trying to check a microwave oven or a cell phone for any type of RF.
There I wouldn't depend on it. In the case of a microwave oven, if you have reason to suspect them, and most microwave ovens, you can tell when something's wrong because you look at the door and the door doesn't seal correctly mechanically. The worst thing you can do with a microwave oven, believe it or not, is put a piece of newspaper in the door and then close it so that it's not making metal-to-metal contact. That extra spacing created by a couple of sheets of newspaper can allow quite a bit of the RF energy to sneak out of there. And some people have in the past had a whole lot of grease spattering outside of their microwave oven onto the door seal. And that's something you really should wash off. But a microwave oven, they're pretty good on leakage as long as the door mechanically comes together correctly. Other than that, if you want to confirm a microwave oven, you really should be using an instrument that is traceable to the bureau, that is calibrated for that particular frequency range. Take a piece of ham radio equipment, rate it up to 150 megacycles, and use it on a 4,500 megacycle microwave oven. You're really pushing your luck on that one, Rich. I wouldn't trust it.
I thought there were 1,200 megs.
Thought there were 24.
You're right. 2,450. 2,450 is the exact frequency, plus or minus a couple of megs, for a microwave oven. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what mine says. Okay, you answered my question there. Another one real quick. If anyone could get any information on a 6-meter loop antenna on how to build one, you know, detailed information on parts and how to assemble, if they could get that information and send it to me, it would be greatly appreciated. That's it. KC2L2Y back to TechNet. Thank you.
I'm trying to remember, what was the brand name of that hula hoop antenna? Not Ringo Ranger, but there was a 6-meter ring antenna, mobile antenna that was very popular. All we'd have to do is find the brand name of that thing and do a Google search. Guarantee there's all kinds of homebrew information on how to build one. Anybody out there remember the name of that thing?
But didn't they call it a halo or something?
Yeah, they called it a halo, but it had a brand name. The silence is deafening on that one. Okay, we'll keep an eye out for that one for you, Rich. I know that Mel had some further questions, so go right ahead, Mel.
Okay, well, basically, what I did up to this point, I figured out I was actually doing some computation, and I wound up basically figuring that what I would do to begin with, I know the, I figure the load impedance of the loop. I know the transmission line input impedance. So I figured I would do, you know, that calculation to find the actual load impedance. This is basically where I've left off at this point. So that, when I find that noise bridge, I think that because, like you said, of all the bombarding of whatnot is not what's hitting that loop, I think with the noise bridge and a filter for 80 meters, I would believe that that may be the way to really make some detailed measurements on that loop, Dick. Over.
You've got a lot of approaches here. In the case of your 600-ohm transmission line, I guarantee to the nearest fraction of a foot, you know the length of that line between your shack and the service loop outside the house and the straight portion that goes parallel to the ground and the portion that goes straight up the antenna. You know the length of that cable. You know it's 600 on the line. You know because it's an airline, it's got a velocity factor of...